This episode of A Productive Conversation is sponsored by Uplift Desk. In today's work environment, it's essential to find balance and promote well-being, and Uplift Desk is here to make that a reality. With a focus on ergonomics and innovative design, Uplift Desk offers standing desks that not only encourage healthier work habits, but also enhance your overall productivity. Each desk is built with unmatched stability and quality, ensuring that your workspace is both dynamic and durable. The beauty of Uplift Desk lies in its extensive customization options, allowing you to select from a vast array of desktops and accessories to fit your specific work needs and aesthetic preferences. Additionally, Uplift Desk is committed to customer satisfaction, offering fast shipping, free returns, and a 15-year warranty. Transform your office and your health by visiting UpliftDesk.com/timecrafting for 5% off your order. That's UpliftDesk.com/timecrafting to get 5% off your entire order. With Uplift Desk, you're not just investing in a piece of furniture, you're investing in a healthier, more productive future. Again, go to UpliftDesk.com/timecrafting to get 5% off your order today. Welcome to A Productive Conversation. It's Mike Vardy once again with an episode from The Vault. Last week, I promised you, if you're a Todoist user, or if you're a startup founder or what have you, or you love to-do list apps, you'd love this episode. Well, this episode from The Vault is from 2016, so we're talking 6 years ago, and it's with Amir Salyafendich. He is the founder, CEO of Todoist, and boy, oh boy, and Doist, actually, back, you know, the Doist company in general. But Todoist is what you probably have heard of before. And we get into, you know, how he uses it and the end game and all that stuff, which, again, if you've been following Todoist for a long time, or even Todoist as a company, just to go back and hear things from that long ago and hear where we are at now, which I'd love to have Amir on again in the future just to see the changes, this is definitely a must listen. So without further ado, let's bring this productive conversation, with Amir Salyafendich here on the podcast. Enjoy. I'd like to welcome Amir Salyafendich, the founder and CEO of Doist, which of course is the company behind Doist, to the Productivityist podcast. Amir, thanks for joining me.
And thanks for having me here, Mike. It's a pleasure.
I had to practice the last name for a little while. Well, you're getting some water before we started, and as you were there, I'm like, okay, let me pronounce the name. Let me get the name down. So I'm glad. I hope I got it right.
Yeah, you did.
Awesome. Awesome. All right. Well, I want to talk to you today. There's a lot of things we can talk about, but I want to dive in first and foremost into your interest in productivity. Like, what got you into the idea of, before we talk about like why you founded Doist and then started Todoist, and of course, WeDoist was also part of that. What was the kind of the trigger for you to start to really dive into the world of productivity?
That's a really good question, Mike. I mean, I think one of the major issues was that I was really, really busy. So I was like a student. I had some part-time jobs. I had some personal projects. And I just like had a lot of like balls in the air. And I needed like, you know, to manage this and manage this, you know, without burning out and without like becoming crazy. So that's like really what got me into it.
And then from there, so you founded, Doist in 2007, correct?
Yeah, I mean, I started like Todoist as a side project from my dorm room in Aarhus in Denmark, you know, where I just like tried to come up with a system that works for me. Yeah. So, you know, 2007, that's where it all started.
And from there, so that was, now why did you start that? Like, I mean, obviously there's lots of tools out there. I mean, when you started, there are so many available to you, and you recognize that you're busy and you wanted to get things done and get the right things done. Why did you say, you know what, we need another tool?
Yeah, but actually, like, I mean, in 2007, there were actually not really that many tools. Like, it's only like from 2007 and upwards that people actually started to do productivity tools. So basically, actually, Todoist was one of the first online-based task management systems. I think like the only other one that I knew of was Remember the Milk. So like all the other ones I think were added later on.
Yeah, we're looking 9 years ago now. That's right. It's been a while. I mean, there were a lot of native ones that you could. I mean, there was IGT. I mean, you're looking at native apps. There were several, but you're right. That was kind of the push when you start to see things like, I think Trello started shortly. Like Trello's been around for a little while. Some of the other ones, Asana showed up, but the real, I think, push was, you're right, web-based applications really started to get the push in 2000, like in that late to the late aught years, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I think also like one of the, native tools were not really speaking to me because like I was using a lot of different systems, mm-hmm. and I really needed a system that you know, went everywhere with me. And also like mobile was started, you know, like smartphones was that year when it all started. So like, you know, native apps did not really have a huge appeal because I didn't, you know, want to be at one specific desktop. Like I wanted to be like everywhere at the university, at work, and have my system with me.
Well, and that leads me to a blog post that you wrote about just recently, earlier this year, on the Todoist blog about Systemist, right? Which is a workflow that you used, which is kind of, you like to think of it as like a simplified getting things done. You mentioned that in the piece. But this kind of also came about at the same time that you started Todoist, right? Like you basically said, this is the system I want to work with. And how much of that Systemist influenced not just Todoist now, but the Todoist that we see today?
I think like a lot of it. I think also like one of the biggest advancements we have had in task management is basically, you know, having a system that can be everywhere. Like, you know, you're in a shopping center, you have your task management system with you. It's fully connected. It's fully synced. You get home to your computer, it's there with you. You go inside, your email is there with you. So like from actually the beginning, that was a huge goal for like both the Systemist and Todoist, like just being everywhere and like just synchronizing stuff on all platforms. And I think that you know, that is a very, very huge thing that was not possible like 10 years ago.
Let's talk a little bit about the Todoist infrastructure itself, because like I said before the call, I've been using Todoist for a long time. It was the tool that, I mean, people who've been listening to my work for a while know that I used OmniFocus. I've used things. I've used a lot of native, and then I went to Asana, and then Todoist was the one that I kind of settled on. It's the one I use as my primary task management application because I love the way it looks and feels. So again, congratulations to you and your team for building something that not just me, but a lot of other people use. My big question is how, when you were developing it and when you're looking at the structure of it, there's the projects, there's the labels, and then there's the filters. And then there's, of course, the today view and the next 7 days view. How do you recommend when people are starting to use a tool like Todoist, or to use Todoist in particular, where do you think that they need to start? Where do you think that the best way for them to adopt a tool like this is going to come from? Is it going to come from, you know, working by project, you know, leveraging those powers of labels, you know, understanding that you can use the priority flags? Like, where do you think someone, when they're first starting out, where do you think they should begin so that they can see the value of the task management app?
I think like that's a very good question. And I think like one of the biggest things about the productivity system is just like having it and, you know, putting stuff into it. So I would probably like start, you know, just like defining some projects in your life that are important to you and then adding some tasks to them. I think like both labels and filters are for like advanced users. Like once you have a lot of stuff inside your system, you probably, you know, want to start to use labels, want to start to use filters. But in the beginning, I think like just using projects, due dates, and maybe like priorities or reminders, like that would be a great start.
Now, when it comes to projects, how do you define a project? I mean, you talk about in this blog post that, you know, the system you use is basically a simplified getting things done. Do your projects have Do you kind of use that areas of responsibility area that David Allen talks about, where you've got like the higher level? Because with projects, you can go four deep, right? You can go four tiers in. So how does your project structure look like? Because some people, when I've seen them used to do is they treat projects like labels and labels like projects. So how do you structure it, and how deep do you go into that project space?
I don't really go that deep. The thing to note is like I mostly use only like two levels. So like I have a parent and then a child project. And then like inside of these, I use subtasks to, you know, detail stuff more. And then like, how do I see a project? I think like, I have like bought some projects. For instance, like I had a trip with my wife, a vacation trip that we planned using Todoist. That was like a one-time project. And then, you know, when it was done, I just like archived it. Mm-hmm. Then I have like some ongoing projects. For instance, review, where I have like all kinds of reviews that I need to do, like both personal or work related, that go into there. And that project like is never finished and will never be finished. So I think like some projects, you know, they are short-lived, others they are there forever.
How do you use subtasks? That's one area that I really, and I guess I think this comes into the whole, again, the idea of, again, the getting things done methodology, which I don't use any longer really anyways. I mean, obviously there's some elements that have, you know, kind of leaked into the system that I use, but subtasks I've always kind of found tricky in Todoist, and I don't know, maybe it's the way I'm wrapping my head around them. Maybe it's just the, like, how do they work? How do you keep them from, obviously if it's a larger task, then that essentially becomes a project. Like, how do you structure those? Because on the Todoist page, which I'm going to put into the show notes, it shows like a shopping list, right? Like that's an example of how, buying groceries is the larger task. And then each of those individual items is a subtask of sorts, but how do you use them?
That is actually a very good question. And the way that I do it is like, I try to think about like a big task that I can split up in smaller tasks, but I don't really like go into huge amounts of details. So basically I try to like limit my tasks to maybe be like between 30 minutes and 1 hour. So that's like estimation is like I try to split them up so like each subtasks, you know, has like 30 to 1 hour estimation. And that's basically how I do it. So like if I have something that can be done in 30 minutes or 1 hour, I just add it as one task. If a task requires 10 hours, then I try to split it up like in maybe 10 like a parent task with 10 subtasks or even more subtasks. So it depends a lot like on the complexity of the thing that I want to do.
What does Todoist not do that you wish it could do right now? What's one of the things, just one, I mean, I'm sure there's lots, but what are one of the things that you'd like to see Todoist do, like when you're using it as the founder and CEO and you're like, oh, I really wish that we had this capability right now. This episode of A Productive Conversation is sponsored by Prolon. If you've ever considered fasting for its health benefits but can't face the idea of days without food, Prolon offers a novel solution. It's a nutrition program that simulates the effects of fasting while allowing you to eat. Developed by scientists at the USC Longevity Institute, Prolon supports weight management, enhances physical performance, and bolsters gut health through a meticulously crafted 5-day meal program. This isn't just another diet. It's a lifestyle change backed by Nobel Prize-winning research, designed to trigger cellular rejuvenation and promote overall well-being. I can't wait to put it through the paces. The meals, ranging from savory soups to nutritious snacks, are all designed to ensure your body achieves a fasting state with the energy you need to maintain your daily routine. Prolon is convenient, providing everything in a single box delivered to your doorstep. I am anxiously awaiting mine. I encourage you to check out ProLon as well. If you're ready to see how ProLon can change the way you think about fasting and nutrition, then right now, ProLon is offering A Productive Conversation listeners 10% off their 5-day nutrition program. Go to prolonlife.com/timecrafting. That's prolonlife.com/timecrafting for this special offer. Head over to prolonlife.com/timecrafting to get started today. This episode of A Productive Conversation is sponsored by 1Password. Imagine a world where forgetting passwords is no longer a hassle and your digital security is uncompromised. 1Password offers a robust, intuitive solution to manage all your passwords with just one master password, safeguarding your information across every device. This isn't just any password manager. It's a comprehensive security tool that encrypts your data, ensuring only you have access. With 1Password, you can generate strong, unique passwords for each of your accounts, store sensitive information securely, and even share important logins with family or colleagues safely. Recognized by Wirecutter as the top pick for password managers, 1Password is the preferred choice for enhancing your online security without the complexity. Enhance your digital security by visiting 1Password.com. And we have a special offer for listeners of A Productive Conversation. Right now, listeners of A Productive Conversation get a free 2-week trial at 1Password.com/productive convo. That's 2 free weeks at 1Password.com/productive convo. 1Password.com/productive convo. Check out what 1Password can do for you, your business, and even your family today. This episode of A Productive Conversation is sponsored by Shopify. Dreaming of starting your own business or looking to take your current one to the next level? Shopify is here to make that dream a reality. As the leading e-commerce platform, Shopify empowers you to start, grow, and manage your business with ease. From setting up your online store to scaling globally, Shopify provides all the tools you need to succeed in the marketplace. Customize your storefront, manage your inventory, and connect with your customers all in one place. With direct-to-consumer pricing, same-day shipping, and a global community of entrepreneurs, Shopify supports your journey at every step. Are you ready to transform your business idea into a success story? Visit shopify.com/timecrafting to start your free trial and embark on your entrepreneurial journey with Shopify. That's shopify.com/timecrafting to start your free trial. Do it today.
I mean, I think like one of the big things that we actually are working on right now, and that I think like I miss sometimes, is basically like smartness in terms of like adding some, for instance, artificial intelligence to the task list itself.
For example, if you email somebody or phone somebody, the Todoist would recognize that when you phone them, it may say, "Hey, do you want to create a follow-up task?" Because I know I have to do that. If I email somebody and they don't email, I create a secondary task after I've done emailing them, saying follow up with so-and-so. So something along those lines?
Yeah, something along those lines. That's actually currently what we are focusing a lot on is scheduling. So basically like having an AI system that can actually learn from your past like scheduling, and then like also looking at all the other users' scheduling, and then can basically like help you with scheduled tasks. Actually, like something that users do a lot in Todoist is basically schedule and reschedule stuff. So you know, if you can save your time, so you don't like even need to think about scheduling, I think that can like be a huge advantage.
So let's talk a little bit about some of the changes that's happened to Todoist over the years. I mean, obviously, what's funny is, and this is just some, again, coming from Canada, we have a bank called TD Canada Trust. And when I saw the Todoist logo the first time, I'm like, hey, that looks like the TD logo. You guys changed your logo recently. Would that have been part of the reason, or did you just decide that it needed a refresh in general?
I mean, we just wanted like a refresh in general, but actually that's a very funny story because like TD Bank is not known at all in Europe.
No.
So actually I did like I did a trip to San Francisco and then like, or to New York. I don't really remember, but like there was TD Banks all over the place.
And you saw the logo in your
Yeah.
Like, yeah, the last thing you want to do is cross a bank when it comes to that kind of thing.
yeah. So that is very unfortunate. And but the thing is, like, we just wanted to, you know, update our branding. Like, we have improved a lot over the years, and we just wanted, you know, to state that.
When you change the colors of the priority flags, and I'm going to go over some of the changes you guys have made, because I've had some of the people that I work with and some of my clients and that I've pushed into, you know, kind of said, hey, we should be using Todoist. And I have a lot of shared projects with Todoist. There's a couple of things that I want to kind of get your feel on. So the changing from the different colors of the priority flags, because they used to be, you know, there's blue, right now it's red, orange, yellow. I mean, I get it. My thoughts on it, or it's the elevating level of fire. Yellow is like smoldering, orange is a bit hotter, red is the hottest. What was the reason behind making that color change? Because it was initially difficult for a lot of people to kind of, at least some of my clients, were not used to seeing the circle colors that were different, and it kind of threw them for a loop.
Yeah, so basically, like, I mean, we did, like, in the beginning, you know, like, when we actually picked these priority colors, they were picked randomly. So, like, mm-hmm. having two blue colors
right.
is not really that optimal. And then, like, having red, you know, it's like there's no logical explanations for why it was picked like that. Mm-hmm. I don't really remember it was picked like that.
Right.
Yeah. And then, like, our designers also looked at it and, like, looked. There's, like, different filters you can apply for people with, like, color blindness. And basically, like, our red and blue, like, the dark blue and red, like, for some color blind people, they were the same color.
Right. Right.
So, like, that was also, like, you know, we are just, like, picking random. Like, these are really important stuff. And we are just, like, we have just picked random colors. And even worse, like, for some colorblind people, you know, they look the same. So that's basically, like, the trigger. And then, like, I mean, a funny part is that a lot of people complain that, you know, this wasn't good for color blindness. But the thing is, like, we actually test for all kinds of color blindness. And we found some colors, you know, that work in all situations. Yeah. So, you know, that was the reason, like, making it more logical and also making it better for colorblind people.
Let's talk about labels again. And I want to talk about something that I would love to see, and I miss it. And it's the one thing I really miss from the last update, I know there was a lot of clamoring, because I belong to the Google Plus community for Todoist, and I saw about being able to organize the labels that you had in whatever order you wanted. I liked the chronological order, and I'll explain why. I don't know what your thoughts are on it, but I'm gonna explain mine, and then I'd love to get your feedback. I loved the chronological order of labels where you weren't allowed to move them. I'm a big believer in constraints, first off. I think that having some constraints are very important. But secondly, is it allowed me to see what labels I wasn't using very easily. So if I was experimenting with labels or adding, and I, instead of having to scan through all my labels now, which I have to do, I could just go to the very bottom of the list and say, oh, there's, first off, here are the ones I've inherited from shared projects. And I'm not going to get into that, because I know that there's reasons that has to happen, because if you share a project and so on and so forth, it'd be just way too difficult to say, okay, who owns this label and whatnot. But my thought process was I really liked that. I liked the ability to see which labels I was using and which ones which ones were getting neglected or not being used at all. And so I'm curious, not about why you abandoned that, but I'm curious about why you didn't leave the option there for the ability to people say, hey, I want to look at these in order. So let's leave that lock on. And then if you want to move your labels around, go ahead. And I noticed it really mattered in the mobile version. So maybe you can shed some light on that. Or maybe you can tell me whether that was something that you enjoyed too. Because, I mean, if you're using labels, maybe that was something that you liked, or maybe not. Maybe you wanted to be able to organize your labels. So I'd love to hear some thoughts on that as well.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, like, sometimes, you know, we are forced to remove a feature that actually people enjoy. Mm-hmm. And the reason for this is that, like, the reason why we actually made it reorderable is because, like, we got a lot of support requests, like, daily, on a daily basis,
yeah.
of people that wanted to move them around. And then, like, their thinking was that, you know, I can move projects around, I can move filters around, why can't I move labels around?
Yeah.
And then, like, we were thinking, okay, that makes sense. Like, currently, it does not make sense, you know, that projects can be moved around, filters can be moved around, but labels are fixed. So basically, you know, that's what we did. Like, then we said, okay, this is, you know, this is being requested every day. We should probably, like, handle this and, you know, make it uniform across, like, projects and labels and filters.
And I know that you can't make every user happy either. That's the thing, is you have to kind of – and my solution to the problem, by the way, was easy. I just created a task called conduct label audit. Then it repeats. It's recurring. And I look at it every couple of weeks and I see which labels I'm using, which ones I'm not. And I spend some time in there. So it's not as quick as it used to be, but it's still effective. And that's, I think that's a lesson. And I want to talk a little bit about this as well, is when you're learning about productivity and as you're building this product and as you're just becoming more in, you know, as you're building the system that you follow and that you kind of share with everyone else, on your team, you notice these things. And if you, there are always solutions to these problems if you pay attention to them. And I think that that's one thing that a simple and clean task app allows you to do, especially when you use it intentionally. So when you guys were building Todoist, and the one thing that's been consistent is the clean design, that seems to be a hallmark of what you're trying to do. And I'd like to get some thoughts on you from that as to, you know, the importance of clean design and being able to access this stuff fairly quickly. What are your thoughts on when you were building this? Did you, you know, because there are lots of tools out there now that make things very visual, maybe overly so, or too list oriented, maybe overly so. Whereas I think Todoist has struck a nice balance. I mean, what are your thoughts on the UI that you guys have built and why that's the way that you've kind of maintained that consistency throughout, you know, since the early days?
Yeah, I mean, I think, like, clean design and minimalistic design and something that does not really, like, fight with you or goes into your way, like, has been with us from the start. And mm-hmm. I think, like, it's very, very important. And for me, you know, it's all about, utility and, like, you know, you managing your data and, you know, the system just, you know, helping you, do that. I think, like, some systems, you know, just go, very extreme, you know, add a lot of graphic, add a lot of stuff that you don't really care about. Like, you know, you want to manage your day, to manage your productivity, to manage your stress. And yeah, so for us, like, that's actually a very important thing, is like just not to add a lot of stuff to it, not to add a lot of, like, visual complexity or complexity in general. And, you know, yeah.
Let's discuss a little bit about Todoist Karma, because you know, this is one of the features that really kind of drew a lot of people. It's the gamification in a lot of ways for some people. And I know it's not really how it appears once you've been in it for a while, but I know, and I know you talk about this in that blog post I mentioned earlier, where it acts as a review. It acts as a trackability. Now, one of the things I want to touch on is that you used to have a lot more in the review function, that you could see reports and the pie view and all that stuff, which isn't really it's a little bit trickier now. And I know you guys are working on some of that stuff, right, to make it even more so you can create this quantifiable database of here's what you've done and here's how far. Like, where does that fit into the plan? Like, how does Todoist Karma kind of fit into the whole overarching scheme of what Todoist is doing for people in terms of their productivity?
I think, like, one of the best features in Todoist is basically the Karma and the review, because if you look, like, at all our competitors, what they are basically, like, focusing on mostly is stuff that you need to do, and they give you, like, very little tools to review your own productivity or get, like, some kind of insights into it. So that's basically what our motivation was with Karma, is basically, like, give you some insights and also, like, make the experience a bit more fun, because, you know, you can track stuff, you can compete against yourself. And I think that that creates like a more fun product than just, you know, looking at what you need to do all the time. And how do we see like Karma evolve? I think like Karma and reviews and like productivity visualization, you know, we have so much to do in this space. And like you said, like we removed some of our visualizations because I think they were quite bad and they were actually not really that much used. So basically like our...
Yeah, there were instances where you tried to view like all your projects and you had like so many colors and slices. I totally see that.
Yeah. So basically like we are trying to do a better system right now where we try to redesign this and also like make it possible to create productivity reports, and you can use it like even, you know, in team settings, or you can use it for individual stuff. So for instance, like you want to, you know, analyze, you know, some sub projects or some group of projects and see like, you know, what have I actually done in this, and this system, report system, will actually give you some insights into your productivity. Yeah, and it can like work on a filter basis, on a label basis, or on a project basis.
Right, right.
So we think like, you know, this can be really, really powerful.
Where do you spend most of your time in Todoist? Do you spend your time in the project view, or have you created, I mean, have you created a series of filters, which is what I've done, that allows you to just basically work filter by filter by filter and never even look at the today view? Or, I mean, it becomes the secondary consideration to look at any other way. Do you have filter? Do you work primarily by filter at this point?
I don't actually. Like, I mostly work like in today view, or mostly in today view.
Wow.
Or like I go into a specific project and then focus on that.
So you work like most people actually work. You work like most people work before they, because it's interesting. Most of the people when I start working with Todoist, they want to look at that today view, that number drives them, and then the project view. Whereas I'm now at the point where if you have the right filters set up. It's interesting because this tool is so, and again, I mean, I want to be clear, this is not a commercial for Todoist, but I mean, the tool is so versatile that you can really imbue your own productivity style and say, you know, like you're working in the today view and projects, I'm working by filter, and we're both getting things done.
Yeah. And I think that's also like one of the beauties is like, we don't really force you to, you know, follow some kind of master plan that we have set up, like and I think also like in the future, and actually right now we are also working on improving the filters and making them much like easier to use, much more powerful, but also you will be able to actually attach filters directly on the top. So like, you know, if you want to have your own left side set up with your own filters, you can actually do that. So that's like a feature that we are very excited about bringing on. And I think like for you and others that use filters a lot, you know, it will be nice for you because like then you can hide today in 7 days and put your own stuff there.
What's your Karma score? Is anyone enlightened?
I mean, I'm not enlightened, and I'm not even close. So mine is 31,800.
So I'm 27,185. So I'm not too far behind. It's funny. I'm looking at the enlightenment. It's like whoever gets there. How many people are enlightened? Out of curiosity, do you know? You must know.
I think it's actually zero.
Is there? There's not a single enlightened person yet. So whoever's listening to the show, if you are enlightened or you're getting close, you got to let me know. And you got to let Amir know, because I think that'd be great. It's one of those things where, because you guys adjusted the Karma score. That was, I want to say at least a year ago, where the levels, and it was, I would imagine you did that because people are using the tool more. So you wanted to make it more challenging, right?
Exactly. So like a lot of people, you know, were on a very high level, and basically they had nothing to look forward to. So right now, like, you know, it will probably, I think, take maybe 5 years of or something to actually reach the enlightenment level.
Because I mean, basically I'm looking at the last, so I've earned 27 karma in the last 6 hours. So, I mean, and that's about average if you hit the weekly goals and so on and so forth. I mean, there are ways, and that's the interesting thing too, is that I know you mentioned the blog post about going on vacation and turning your karma settings off, and I think that that's one of the first things I recognize to do. But I mean, I have very low, and I think it's because of the fact that I have to use another tool with some of the team collaboration stuff that we use, because not everybody's using this. And the one thing, and maybe this is kind of where we can start to get closer to wrap things up. How big of a team, you know, if you want to have as many people involved, like, is that the long-term plan with Todoist for Business, is to make it so that the team inbox kind of is the holding, like kind of like the landing pad for everything. And then people can drag things out, put them in their own projects. Is that's the plan? Or is it, you know, is there a much larger plan for how can we scale this so that teams of, you know, varying sizes can be involved in multiple projects and not everybody's getting lost in the shuffle? Because that's one of the things that I kind of struggle with Todoist, is once it gets past like another person I'm sharing the project with, it kind of gets a bit muddy. So how do you work with it with like, how many people do you have sharing a project with you and so on and so forth?
Mike, I can tell you, like, we use Todoist a lot inside the company, mm-hmm. obviously. And like, my share project is basically like a huge mess right now.
Yeah.
So like, if you actually use this, and I think a lot of actually companies use this, to do stuff, to organize stuff. It's not a very good tool right now. And that's like something that we are really trying hard to improve. And I think also like, in the near future, you will see some huge advancement in this. Like, basically we are going to try to split up things like your personal data with like the team you're sharing with, or the teams you like, you can have multiple teams that you're sharing stuff with, and make that really easy and really nice. And also like currently, like, one of the things you mentioned is basically like label pollution. Like, you right. share stuff and then suddenly you have like a ton of labels that you don't really care about. So that's also something that we are going to, you know, try to improve, and like also filters, like, I mean, imagine like if you can actually have filters for teams, that can also be really powerful, a report or karma for teams as well. So, I think there's a lot of like things that we can actually improve on and make this a really kick-ass tool for businesses.
And last question before I wrap up. We've seen a lot of task management tools get acquired in recent years. I'm not going to ask if you're going to be acquired or looking to be acquired, but there is one of the big guys hasn't, well, actually there's a couple, but I mean, Microsoft acquired Six Wunderkinder, and Wunderlist is now, you know, they still are a standalone, but I think it's just a matter of time before they get absorbed into, you know, the Microsoft Office kind of realm and part of maybe Outlook Tasks. Because let's face it, Outlook Tasks is not exactly the most robust tool on the planet. And Microsoft Project, I don't think many people – I mean, those who use Microsoft Project and use it well, they love it. But most people, when they first look at it, are, you know, they don't even want to go near it. You know, Google has bought Timeful. You talked about intelligent AI and stuff. So they've got Timeful and they've picked up Sunrise. So there's a lot of like the bigger players are starting to recognize that a task management solution is something that you need to kind of, you know, have in your back pocket, because people are either working out of their email inbox and not getting as much done, or they don't have the tight integration. And Todoist does have a lot of that, you know, with the Gmail extensions and Outlook extensions and the web, you know, the web extensions. But when you see a company like Google, who hasn't really acquired a task management solution yet, or, you know, I mean, Yahoo acquired, what was the name of the company, Astrid, years ago. And Apple really is just kind of using reminders and just kind of adding more and more to it. What do you think the future, do you think that you're going to see one of those larger companies say, you know what, Google Tasks isn't cutting it for it, we need something more robust. Same thing with Apple, you know, we have reminders, but we need to have a task management solution. Do you see that that's something that the bigger players are going to want to have in the future as part of their suite of offerings that they can give to consumers?
I mean, that's a very good question, but...
Or do you even care?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Like, I think these companies, you know, they don't really care that much as we do. Like, you know, this is our livelihood. And this is, like, something that we care deeply about. Like, you know, I have spent, like, almost 10 years working on this. So, and for them, you know, it's just, like, some kind of thing they need to include on their platforms. And they don't really have, like, a deep vision or a deep passion for it. And I doubt, like, that will change anytime soon. So I'm not really that worried about this. And also, I think, like, both what Google has done, you know, and Apple has done, I think, like, you know, so far, it's really, really crappy products like Google Keep and Apple Reminders.
Yeah. You know,
yeah, I don't really understand people that use it. So of course, like, these companies, you know, they have, like, billions and billions of dollars, and they could easily.
Yeah, the question is, do they buy it to kill it, or do they buy it to absorb it? Right, you know what I mean? Like, and I mean, look at with Evernote right now, Evernote and OneNote. As we're recording this, Microsoft just released a tool to help people convert from Evernote to OneNote a lot easier. So they've had OneNote around forever. It's been around for a long time, and not a lot of people used it until, frankly, and this is my opinion, Evernote all of a sudden started to make a lot of noise, and Microsoft said, hey, wait a minute, we've had this thing that's kind of like Evernote that's been around for a while. But I think you're right. I think when it comes to third-party developers and those that are, I mean, you're going to have a hard time. Look what happened with Mailbox. Mailbox, you know, the guys who ran Orchestra created Mailbox, Dropbox bought Mailbox, and then Dropbox killed. You know, basically, they've kind of killed it, right? So, you know, that's always my concern about it. And I have a lot of people, and you can put a lot of people come to me and they say, well, why would I want to use a tool that's from, like, a third party if they could be acquired like any of these other ones? So this is your chance to say, like, you guys aren't going anywhere. You've been working on this for 10 years. If people are going to place their confidence, and I mean, frankly, the price per month for Todoist is so reasonable, incredibly reasonable. Do people have need to worry that you're going to be another Spring Pad or another app that goes? Notice I threw the Spring Pad word out there. you guys are going to be around for a while, right?
I mean, Mike, I can tell you, like, I actually declined all acquisition talks, and we have had a lot during the years. So like, you know, our plan is not to sell out and kill our product. It's actually, you know, build something that's sustainable and build something that's for the long term. And I think also, like, in general, like, this market that we are operating in, it's a huge one. And I think, like, not many people are actually aware of how big it could actually be. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, most people in the world need a tool for organization, need a system for organization. Most teams need that. And currently, only a few companies in the world are actually actively, like, really focusing on improving this. So that's what we see, you know, like, we see huge potential, and we don't really see, like, us joining, you know, Google or Microsoft or Apple or another big company. Like, you know, they would just buy us out and kill the product. And, like, you know, this would be a disaster, like, you know, 10 years just thrown out, for some millions. Like, yeah, it's not going to happen. So I don't really think, like, people need to worry.
There you go. So those people that are thinking about giving Todoist a spin, or those who are using Todoist, rest assured, you've got the tool that you can use for the long haul. Amir, thanks so much for joining me this week on the podcast. I had a great time chatting with you. Where can people find you on the internet if they want to, you know, follow your work? And also, I mean, I'll send them to Todoist.com. In fact, Amir, where can people find you on the internet?
I think, like, the best option is Twitter. It's Amix, A-M-I-X, 3-K. Yeah, so that's my username. And you can follow me. You can message me there. I will try to respond as soon as possible. Yeah.
Great. Amir, thanks again for joining me on the podcast this week.
And thank you, Mike. It was a real pleasure. And, you know, also thanks a lot for, you know, using Todoist for many years.
Thanks to Amir for joining me on this episode. You can find everything that you're looking for related to the podcast episode. All you have to do is go to productivityist.com/podcast434 to make that happen. Now, in the not too distant future, when you go there, it's going to redirect you to something else, but I'm not going to share that with you right yet, because as we're recording this, which of course is before the summer months have those vault episodes happening with more frequency. We're making some changes to the brand and all that stuff. So stay tuned for that, and stay tuned for next episode where we have a fresh one for you. It's Jay Kahana of Cave Day. He's joining me for a productive conversation. This is one that's been in the makings for quite some time. It's fairly recent too, so I hope you'll get a kick out of that one. By the way, if you want to support the show beyond subscribing to the podcast so that you don't miss any of the episodes to come, and the 400 plus that we've done are easily accessible, you can, you know, check out our sponsors. Go to productivityist.com/podcast sponsors, and you can check out all the sponsors listed there, some of which you would have heard during the conversation with Amir today. That's it for this episode. Thanks so much for taking the time to join me. Until next time, I'm Mike Vardy, the host of A Productive Conversation, reminding you to stop doing productive and start being productive. See you later.